This podcast brought to you by Hope 103.2.
Liz Ellis is a household name both for her amazing netball career and her impressive media achievements. But what most of us haven't known about Liz until quite recently is that she and her husband faced a five-year battle with secondary infertility. She's opened up her heart and all that she's learned to help other couples to deal with what is an extremely difficult situation. Her new book, If at First You Don't Conceive, is a guidebook to tackling infertility and all that goes along with it. Thank you so much for your time today, Liz.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Now, tell me about how your love affair with netball started.
It really started with watching my mum play. And for so many little girls, their first and best role model is their mum. And absolutely the same for me. So mum used to play up at the local courts at Windsor and I used to go and watch her play. And we never got to watch netball on the telly back then. You know, this was sort of nearly 40 years ago. And, you know, I used to think it was like rugby league. So I'd sit on the sideline and go, tackle her, mum, tackle her. And then when it became my turn to play, I soon learned that you can't tackle. although there would be people who would argue that that's exactly how I used to play. But, so it just really started with watching my mum play. And then from the moment I stepped on court, I loved it.
Wow. So were you a natural? Did it come easily?
No. I was enthusiastic is probably the best way to describe me. And I used to want to be a bit of a ball hog. And I was good, but I certainly wasn't great. I wasn't, I've never considered myself to be a natural athlete. I've always had to be someone who's had to work really hard, you know, on my footwork and my fitness and my strength and that sort of stuff. I'm naturally built like a toothpick. So, from the get-go, I loved it, but I wasn't the best.
Okay. Well, that's quite inspiring for, you know, young girls hearing this who aren't, like, naturally the best. But when did it sort of become clear to you that you could go a really long way in netball?
Oh, it wasn't until I was older. You know, I was nearly 18 and I was just about to finish school and I got an invitation to apply for a scholarship to the AIS. And I'd started making New South Wales schoolgirls teams and I'd made a New South Wales under-17s team. So I knew that I had potential. You don't sort of wander into those teams by buying a raffle ticket. So I knew that I was good, but I didn't realise what it could become. You know, again, there wasn't this, you know, pervasive sense that, you know, you could make a career out of netball. But certainly there was no money to be made. So no one steered me in that direction. But I got this invitation to apply for this scholarship to the AIS and I thought this could be a great opportunity. And mum and dad were pretty determined that both my sister and I would pursue our education as far as we could. So, they sort of encouraged me to go to Canberra but also encouraged me to start my university degree at the ANU at the same time. So it wasn't until I got there that I realised there was this whole world out there of, you know, national leagues and the Diamonds and the Australian netball team. And once I sort of discovered all that, that's when I really wanted to turn myself to representing in those teams.
Mm. We're based in Seven Hills in Western Sydney and you grew up not too far away. So, Liz, you are an amazing role model for young girls because not only did you have this incredible netball career, but you're smart and you've got a law degree, right? And any kid could kind of aspire to the things that you've achieved. But I think netball is what you've kind of more based your life around. What did netball give you?
Look, it gave me, it was the thing that I was passionate about. You know, I went to school at Blacktown. So, you know, I talk to kids from Western Sydney and say, all you need are two things. One is a dream and two is the ability to work hard. And once you have those two things, you're actually, unstoppable. No one can really stop you from achieving what you want or from going very, very close. So the reason I chose netball is because I was passionate about it. I loved it. You know, I practiced law for nearly 5 years and I was competent at it. I worked for a large firm in the CBD, but I didn't love it. It wasn't the thing that I really loved to do. And, you know, when I woke up in the morning, the thing that I wanted to concentrate on was playing netball and training for netball and that sort of thing. So when I sort of realised that netball was my passion, I set about a way to try and make it pay. And I started up some netball clinics for kids and I attracted some sponsors and I really didn't look back. I left my law degree and my law career. So I haven't considered going anywhere near it since.
Yeah, wow. What would you say to, you know, parents listening who may have a netball-obsessed daughter? How can we help them achieve their potential?
I guess support them, but don't push them. So the thing that I saw coming through in my netball career, and then I often see or used to see when I was doing netball clinics, and I see it now as a commentator, is the people who succeed, the girls who succeed, are the ones who have really been able to drive their own journey, have been able to make their own decisions and follow their passion. The girls who were pushed by their parents or whose parents rode them when they were younger tend to drop out. I had a lot of friends who did that because their parents were more invested in their netball career than they were. So it's all about supporting them. You know, my parents are a great example. They're always really surprised when I got selected into teams. I come home and say, oh, I got into the New South Wales under 17s team. They're like, oh, really? We didn't think you were that good. Okay, darling, what do you need? So they basically didn't push me, but were quite happy to help me get what I needed. And often it was just being driven to training or, being taken to the gym or something like that. So I guess support and encouragement, but not pushing, is the key.
Yeah, you're obviously very self-motivated. I'm speaking with Liz Ellis, former Australian captain, and we're talking about her netball career, but also her new book, If at First You Don't Conceive. It's a guidebook to tackling infertility. So Liz, when you retired from netball, you and your husband suddenly decided that maybe you would have a child, which I believe wasn't part of your original plan. What changed for you?
We drank sangria in Barcelona and thought, kids would be great. We really weren't thinking about it. It was sort of in the back of our minds. And then we went on this holiday to Europe. I had been retired for a couple of years and a few things in our lives had changed. My husband had sold his business and I wasn't playing netball anymore. And we thought, well, I'm getting into my late 30s. If it's going to happen, we actually need to do something about it now. It had always been a fuzzy sort of idea in the back of our heads that we might like to have kids one day. And then, you know, as I was approaching 40, I thought, well, one day needs to be soon. But we sort of weren't that fast. If we fell pregnant, yay. And if we didn't fall pregnant, we thought we'd just get on with our lives and travel and be selfish and do all the things that we enjoyed doing. So as I think as a result, because there was no stress and we didn't really mind, we fell pregnant within 6 weeks with our little girl. And she was born and we thought, oh, this having babies business, it's easy. It's like getting on a horse. So we got back on the horse and we were pregnant again when she was about 10 months old or 9 months old. And we thought, oh, this is great. We'll punch out two kids and that'll be perfect. And unfortunately, that next pregnancy ended in a miscarriage. And that was really the beginning for us of this engagement with the infertility industry and understanding that we were suffering from secondary infertility.
There must have been a shock after having had the first baby so easily. And it sounds like you really took to motherhood like a duck to water and you really enjoyed it. So I can only imagine that when you hit this roadblock, it must have really thrown you.
It did. And, you know, I had a body that had always done what it was told to do. When I needed to be fitter, I just got fitter. And when I needed to be stronger, I worked harder and got stronger. So, you know, getting my body to do as it should had never been an issue for me. And even, you know, when we were trying to fall pregnant with our first, it took us 6 weeks, we were pregnant. So it had never been a problem. And suddenly there was a problem. There was a problem that we either couldn't conceive or whenever we did, there was a miscarriage. So it was a terrible shock to the system.
I had a reasonably similar experience to you, Liz, because I had my first child relatively easily, but then had a string of miscarriages trying for number two. And it's a sort of was a funny thing going through that because I already had a child and I found it hard to justify to people, you know, why I was so desperate for another one, because naturally people will say to you, well, oh, you're so blessed, you have a baby. Were the people around you understanding of your situation at the time?
Yeah, they were. We had moved to the country, so I wasn't surrounded by a lot of people, and I didn't tell a lot of people what was going on. As we were going through infertility treatment, my sister knew, and she had had her two children by way of IVF. So she was super supportive. Mum was supportive. But, you know, occasionally you just sort of feel as if, oh, my God, there are people out there who haven't had their first baby, and here I am feeling sorry for myself because I can't get my second baby. So, like, you almost judge yourself. You don't need anyone else around you judging. You can pass plenty of judgment on yourself, isn't it? And that's exactly what I did.
Yeah, totally. Infertility, like any really stressful situation, can put a lot of strain on a relationship. You know, obviously, often there can be a lot of expense involved or the medical procedures. Do you have any advice for how to handle that, like the relationship side of it with your partner?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of things, and I write about this in my book. The first thing is to always keep in mind why you're trying to have your baby, and that's because you love each other. So, you know, try and remain intimate. Even though that intimacy now is almost an end in itself, and you can hear my second child behaving like a sheep in the background.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, no, he's quite happy just, you know, barring. So intimacy is something that tends to go by the wayside, but it's probably one of the things that you need the most. The other thing is there is absolutely no doubt that IVF is expensive. And, you know, during our treatment, and I have friends who did the same thing, you get to the point where you go, okay, how do you know when to stop? So I want people to actually think about that before they get started. Oh. Think about at what point financially you're prepared to go to, or how many years or months you're prepared to try for. Some people put a limit based on a particular birthday. So, but have a think about it before you get started. And the reason is that if you're trying to figure out when to stop when you're in the middle of it, you actually use a different part of your brain when you're under stress and feeling pressure. Before you start, you'll use a part of your brain that's built for reasoning and logic and gathering all available information. When you make a decision when you're under pressure, you actually use a part of your brain that's called the lizard brain, basically. And it's, you know, your basic survival. It's the instincts for survival. So fight, flight, reproduction, fear, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, if you're trying to use that part of your brain, you're not going to make a good decision, a decision that's best for you. The decision that part of your brain will make will always be keep going until you reproduce, regardless of the consequences. So I would say to people before you go in, have an idea about when might be enough. Now, you might get to that point when you're in the middle of it and think, oh, no, we can keep going. But at least you've got that point to make you stop and think. So, you know, it's not a hard and fast rule, but it's a decision that you made when you were acting logically and reasonably. And I would say to people, do that. You know, do that before you go in. Be prepared.
Absolutely. So why did you decide to write a book about your experience? And, I mean, it's not just about your experience. Obviously, it's quality information to help people through a difficult time. But what motivated you to do that?
You know, I got to the end of my treatment, and we eventually stopped treatment. And we had been unsuccessful. We'd had a couple of miscarriages, and we just thought, you know, we're focusing on the baby that we don't have yet. We actually need to be focusing on the child that we do have. And then we felt pregnant naturally once we'd taken all the pressure off. So I became one of those people, which was really annoying.
All those people who said to you, just relax now, like, right. I told you.
I know. And you know what? I had to have a conversation with my mum halfway through treatment. And said, Mum, I don't want to hear those stories. And then when I became one of those stories, she was like, see, I told you so. But I got to the end and I had all this information sitting on my desk at home. And I thought, I could either throw this out or I could actually pass the information on somehow. And I started to think that, you know, when you're in the middle of treatment, it actually is like walking blind through a snowstorm looking for something white. Like you don't know what you're missing. You don't know what you're not seeing. You don't know what you're looking for. Whereas when I got to the end, I thought there's actually a way to strategize through this. There's a way to plan. And, you know, initially my idea was to write just an advice book and hang it off my story. But then I got a great piece of advice early on, which was actually to get past your story. And the more research I did, the more I realised that there was any number of ways to be infertile for it to affect you. And so I went and gathered other people's stories, and then I made sure I had the relevant medical information and advice. And hopefully this is a book that, you know, speaks to lots and lots of people and basically assures them that, A, they're not alone, and, B, there is a way to plan your way through this. And come out the other side one way or another.
Yeah, I love the diversity of stories in the book. I think people can find all sorts of situations that they might be facing. So just finally, Liz, you know, thank you so much for sharing a bit of your story with us. What's the one thing, I guess, that you've learned from all this that, you know, if you could go back in time, you'd like to whisper in Liz's ear? You know, what's the thing that you've learned?
I guess the first thing I would say is I'd love to whisper into my ear, it'll be okay in the end, and if it's not okay, it's not the end. And you need to sort of keep in mind that you will come through this one way or another. The other thing is to own your own treatment. Be proactive about yourself. Ask questions, have a plan, make sure that you've got the right GP. Don't be afraid to shop around until you get the right GP. Make sure you've got the right specialist. Don't be afraid to walk away from a specialist because you feel that he or she isn't right for you. Essentially, everyone needs to remember that the only person who is the expert in you is you. And you've got access to very well-trained medical specialists in this country who are the best in their field in the world, but they need sometimes to be guided as to what's best for you by you. So own your own treatment and have your partner be part of that ownership as well.
Okay. Thank you so much, Liz. It's been lovely to talk to you.
My pleasure. Thank you. Sorry about the 2-year-old. He's pretty cute, but, you know, he's too.
Oh, he's lovely, I'm sure. That's netballer Liz Ellis. We've been talking about her new book, If at First You Don't Conceive.
Thanks for listening. Start your day with Life Words. Subscribe to Hope 1032's free daily email devotional at hope1032.com.au.